Coming to you from the Rock and Run Brewery in Liberty, this is State House Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison from KCUR 89.3. We've taken our podcast on the road this week and are pleased to be here enjoying pizza and pale ale and politics with a great crowd, a standing room only crowd here at Rock and Run. And also we are joined by two representatives whose districts actually cover this area where we are. Representative TJ Berry lives in Kearney. His district covers this very space that we're in right now. Welcome to you, Representative Berry.
Thank you very much.
We have an applause meter to see who gets the most applause here over the course of the evening. If you stepped outside and took a rock and threw it over the county jail across the street, you would be in Representative Mark Ellibrock's district, and we welcome him.
Thank you.
So sometimes on this podcast, we've asked a question about family or pets, but I actually learned a little something. You both are proud graduates of Liberty High School.
Absolutely.
Class of 99.
So, and you were in the same class, TJ, is that?
Class of 84.
Oh, okay. I was very close. So I guess you have a lot in common. But on the other hand, some might look at your records and say you don't have as much in common. Mark, you're a Democrat, you're a lawyer, you're in your first year of the legislature in the General Assembly. TJ Berry, you're in your fourth term, you're a Republican, and you are a serial entrepreneur, not a lawyer.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you about your different experiences. And Mark, you've been in Jeff City now for 3 months.
That's right.
How have they been, different than you expected?
Excuse me. I think the biggest differences that I think I've noticed are probably the way that there does seem to be a difference in the way the Kansas City side operates and the way the St. Louis side kind of operates. So not in a bad way or anything. It's just a kind of a different culture. We're, you know, a little more laid back over here on this side of the state. We're a little friendlier. Not, I shouldn't say it like that. Not that St. Louis folks aren't friendly. Not coming
after. Yeah, that's okay. We don't have any listeners in St. Louis, so it's fine.
But yeah, I was a little surprised because a lot of the bills that come up are, you know, brought forward by the Republicans from the St. Louis County area, and they're addressing certain areas that have problems or certain legislative issues that they want to see addressed. And I look at it and I'm like, we don't have that problem over here in Clay County. Like, that's not an issue that really arises here all that often. Huh. Of course, then again, I'm on like the Judiciary and Litigation Reform Committee, so I see a lot of courtroom stuff come through on my committee, so it's a little different experience.
Okay. So my question for you, TJ, you've been there for seven-ish, going on 7 years now. How has it changed in the time that you've been there? Is Jeff City of 2017 different than 2011 when you started?
Yeah, absolutely it is. Not because the people change, but the number of Republicans in Jefferson City has gone from a majority to a supermajority, from a Democratic governor to a Republican governor. And so you've had a lot of change in that format. And then the focus on ethics has gone from not very much in focus in 2011 to very in focus today.
And is that a good thing?
Of course it's a good thing.
Do you think anything's going to happen with regard to ethics this year?
You know, the House passed ethics reform the first 2 weeks of the session. It is over in the Senate currently, and I can't speak for them.
We'll talk more about that. Well, actually, let's talk more about it right now. So,
sure. So
yes, they did pass a ban on lobbyist gifts in the first week of the session, but yep. But that's the only ethics bill that has passed, and there was a lot of talk about a whole package of changes that the governor wanted to see, that the Republican leadership of the House and the Senate have talked about. But it hasn't happened.
You know, actually, Brian, I voted against that ethics bill. I was one of a bare handful that voted against it. And I voted that way because the number one protection for the people is transparency. And Missouri has extremely transparent laws. Every cup of coffee, every dinner or a ticket that a representative or a senator would take has to be reported. Every constituent can get on the Missouri Ethics website and see exactly what their legislator is doing and with who. When you do the ethics reform that has been proposed, I really worry that the same activity is going to take place, but now it's going to be much more hidden.
Mark Ellerbrock, did you vote for the ban on lobbyist gifts?
I did vote for the ban on lobbyist gifts. I thought it was a kind of a good start. The problem is, people say we're transparent. Yeah, we're transparent with regard to lobbyist gifts. When lobbyists show up at our office, nobody's going to buy a vote for a sandwich over lunch or something like that. That's kind of silly.
Even if it's a really good sandwich?
Yeah, I don't care how good your sandwich is, man. Okay. I'm not going to vote your way just for a sandwich. The real problem isn't necessarily just the ethics reform when it comes to lobbyist gifts. The real problem is transparency and campaign like finance. So we have a governor that took millions of dollars in dark money that we can't trace and we don't know where it came from. We got a president pro tem of the Senate that took $100,000 5 days after he dropped a bill that would basically excuse his largest donor from a lawsuit. That's the real kind of ethics reform we need. I mean, we've got crooked politicians down there. Not everybody's crooked. Hell, I like TJ a lot. We get along pretty well. And, we have a pretty good climate in the House. But, when you look at certain things and you see certain circumstances, it's just too easy to start connecting dots on people.
I want to pursue your suggestion that the president pro tem of the Senate, Ron Richard, is
crook.
You tweeted today at me.
Yeah.
You said a tweet that said, "Ask me why Ron Richard is a crook."
I'll tell you why.
So I'm asking.
All right. Hold on a second. Let me get my evidence. So there was a lawsuit that was filed against David Humphreys, or Tamco, I should say. He's the CEO of Tamco. Now, Tamco makes shingles, and they're involved in a class action lawsuit. So there's a case, it's number 14AO-CC00110. That's the case number.
For our audio listeners, he is not doing that from memory. He has pulled out his phone and is reading notes.
I got my little notes, yeah. And then it was filed on April 15th, 2014, the next legislative cycle. Ron Richard filed a bill that would basically undo the law that they were using to sue David Humphreys and Tamco. Right, and it hadn't been filed ever before. This is a law that basically guts the Consumer Protection Act. Right, so that was the first year it was filed. David Humphreys was nothing and nobody with regard to most political donations and campaign contributions. He hadn't really, you can go back through Ron Richard's campaign finance reports. He didn't give him any money in 2010. He didn't give him any money in 2014. He didn't even give him any money in 2008 when he was running, I think, for the first term in the Senate. There was no campaign donations. Then
he did run unopposed, just to put that in there.
He had lots of money coming to him from a lot of different places, and not a single one was David Humphreys. Then this lawsuit comes around, this litigation gets dropped, and the next election cycle in 2016, Humphreys and Tamco were into this thing for $3.5 million, $200,000 of it to Ron Richard.
But let me zero in on what you're suggesting. I mean, are you suggesting that the Senate President Pro Tem, in fact, has been bought for campaign contributions?
I'm not suggesting it. I'm saying it. He has. Look at the numbers.
Hey, Brian Ellison here, breaking into the live taping at this point to let you know that we thought we should check with Senate President Pro Tem Ron Richard to see if he wanted to respond to this allegation that his support for Senate Bill 5 was bought by donations from David Humphreys. We spoke with Lauren Heeger, who is Communications Director for the Senate Majority Caucus. When I told her what I was calling about, she told me, quote, "Senator Richard has been very, very consistent for the past 3 months in saying no comment." She told me that Richard is asked about it at almost every press conference and that the answer is the same because the bill has a lot of parts and it's still in process. He just doesn't want to get into it. I also asked about an Associated Press report a few weeks ago after Mark Ellerbrock made very similar comments, and Ron Richard was asked about those specifically. And the AP says that Richard's response was that Ellerbrock should, quote, "kiss my ass." Lauren Heeger would not comment on that either. All right, back to the podcast.
Representative Barry, you are not in any, you have no need to defend the Senate President Pro Tem, but what do you hear when you hear suggestions like that?
If the money could be used personally in any way, I could maybe go down that road. But when the Senate Pro Tem, he's spent 8 years in the House and then he's completing 8 years in the Senate, and he's run unopposed in the House 4 terms. He's run unopposed by anyone, Republican or Democrat, that for 2 terms in the Senate. How do you get to the place where he's bought and paid for when there's been no opposition for him to run against where he would need to be bought?
I can tell you.
Okay, so, very quickly, what's your answer to that?
The way the campaign finance rules used to work, one campaign committee could donate to another campaign committee so that I could take a check from Gail McCann Beatty, our floor leader, and she, her campaign committee could write me a check. So Ron Richard, if you start going through these MEC reports, you'll start seeing a lot of campaign donations either back to the Missouri Campaign Committee, and then from the Missouri Campaign Committee out to other candidates, or directly from Ron Richard to other candidates so that he could get votes to be the president pro tem in the Senate.
Gives him power within his caucus, yeah, is the suggestion. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is true, right, TJ? I mean,
both parties, absolutely, that's
right.
True.
So let me get away from just talking about Senator Richard to kind of this, the broader issue of ethics in the Missouri legislature. I think I started hosting this in 2015, and I don't think an episode of the podcast has passed where this has not come up in one form or another. And yet, it doesn't feel like very much has changed, even when laws come to the floor, bills come to the floor, sometimes even pass, but they don't make it out of the Senate if they pass in the House. Is that a systemic problem, or what's happening?
We passed an ethics bill in 2015. So an ethics bill did pass, dealing, and it made it through the whole process. The question is what is enough? How far do you need to go? How do you legislate good action by a person? Can you legislate good action? And I don't know if you can or can't. But you can try.
But you can certainly legislate criminal penalties for people that are obviously crooked. If you look at 18 USC, that's a federal statute, 18 USC chapter 666. That's the one on federal or on corruption for actors who take federal money and use it in any kind of various capacity. That's the one that I think they should be looking into.
So we had a guest a couple weeks ago who said that maybe the problem isn't where we spend a lot of our time focusing, which is on lobbyist gifts or the revolving door for lobbyists, but maybe it's on the character of the people who serve. that maybe there's just an issue sometimes, and certainly in some of the cases that have led to very high-profile resignations of sure. legislators, there were particular incidents of misconduct that became public. But I guess my question to you is, as you look around at your fellow representatives and the senators, do you see a problem of character? Is that the problem that can't really be solved through legislation, TJ?
It's not a systemic problem. It's an individual problem. Okay, out of the 163 House members, I think that you have a bare handful of people that you would consider even marginally unethical. But the question is, the old saying that one rotten apple spoils the whole barrel, that is the case that is taking in ethics. And we all get brushed by that.
That's kind of the point, is that the guy arose to power in the Senate. He's the president pro tem of the Senate. He's in charge of what bills come to the floor. He's in charge of which committee assignments people get. He is basically the dictator of the Senate. And, you know, to answer your question more specifically, I see a lot of good people down there for a lot of good reasons, both Republicans and Democrats that have the right idea in their heart. But like TJ said, a rotten apple will spoil the whole barrel. And when his legislation's coming up and it's all designed to benefit one wealthy donor, and we've got a governor who won't tell us where his money's coming from, won't tell us who's footing the bill for his travel, won't tell us what this, like, not-for-profit organization or whatever is that's designed to advance him, and he doesn't even speak with the press about it. I mean, what is he tweets about it. And then the media reports on the tweet as though the tweet is news. That's kind of the cyclical problem here.
So I want to invite our audience to be part of our conversation today. You can come to this microphone at the front. So people can come up to ask a question, and while they're starting to make their way up, let me ask you about something that happened today. You both came pretty much straight here from Jeff City, where you were on the House floor today, and there was a big vote on Real ID, something we've talked about on the podcast a number of times. Bring folks up to speed. Back in 2005, the federal government made some requirements about state IDs and requirements that they come into compliance with some federal standards. 45 states have done that. Missouri's one of the five that hasn't. And if something doesn't change by next January, people in Kansas City or St. Louis who want to fly out of those airports won't be able to use their driver's license to get through security. You all passed a bill today out of the House that would make provide an option to make Missouri licenses compliant. TJ Berry, you voted for it.
Absolutely, and that bill was sponsored by Representative Kevin Corlew from here in Clay County. So I think that Mark and I both supported the bill. And the information that some people are really worried or that's being shared, the government already has the information. This is just a question of how are the databases searched. So I think that we need to go ahead and do a real ID and be compliant and allow people to get on their airplanes and do what they need to do for travel.
Mark Ellerbrock, you actually voted present today. So you didn't vote yes or no. Well, how come?
Well, I got a couple of different reasons. The first and the biggest one is that I've heard that there's a lot of turmoil over on the Senate side. There's a real question about whether or not they're going to get this thing passed in the first place. And it was sort of a protest vote with regard to that. They had already gotten the votes they needed to pass the bill. So it wasn't, they didn't need my vote to pass it out.
Passed 99 to 40, I believe.
Something along those lines, yeah. So they had already had the vote. The thing is, like, it creates an option for people not to get the real ID, which I think is kind of a foolhardy thing to do. Everybody needs to get it, or, you know, nobody needs to get it. And I understand that's a compromise. I get it. But if we're going to switch over to this new system, it's got to be the new ID. It's going to create a lot of confusion and a lot more heartache if there's two different kinds of IDs floating around. Nobody knows what to see. Governor Greitens 2 days ago said something along the lines, however ill-advised it was for him to say this, said that he was going to take a wait-and-see approach on Real ID because he didn't know what Donald Trump was going to do yet. So, you know, that the whole thing, the way the majority caucus has been handling themselves, I'm sounding really partisan here. I don't intend to. I'm just sort of upset with it. What seems like a good common sense idea that we should all be doing, and we're getting, you know, a lot of people that are giving resistance on this stuff for no good reason. I mean, your birth certificate is a government document. Your Social Security card and your passport, those are all government documents. We're not hiding personal privacy here. We're organizing and creating a secure and safe ID that can be relied upon to enter military installations or fly in airplanes and stuff.
You're nodding, TJ.
Well, you realize that the debate on the House floor today was not Republican versus Democrat.
Right.
This debate on the House floor today was Republican versus Republican.
That's right.
Okay, so you had one group of Republicans that believe extreme philosophical purity and privacy, and the other group that is saying, okay, how does this practically all work, and how do we serve the people so that they can go to the airport, use their license, and get on an airplane?
Well, we'll see how it goes in the Senate. Of course, in the Senate, there's another bill by Senator Ryan Silvey, also of the Northland, that tries to promote it with a slightly different approach. So we'll see how it goes. Let's take some questions from the audience. If you'd just tell us your name and ask your question.
Hi, my name is Taylor, and my question is, women are highly underrepresented in the legislature, I think like 17% or something in Missouri. Mm-hmm. What steps do you guys take to ensure that the interests of half of your constituents are represented in the State House?
This is a somewhat glib answer, but it's a true answer. It takes people being involved, and to get our job takes $50 and a trip to Jeff City, and you too can run for state representative. Now, to directly...
You know, most of these people live in your district, so be careful with that.
I think he's termed out.
I'm termed out.
Scared. You're termed out. It's fine.
So
go ahead.
$50. But I know that I absolutely listen to people who call me, who write me. My cell phone number is on my website, and I answer it because, A, the number one thing that people have told me that they really get angry with is they cannot get a hold of their representative. Folks, we're going to disagree. We're humans, okay? But if we treat each other with respect and you actually can have a conversation with your representative, I believe that you'll walk away and say, dang, I didn't agree with him, but he listened to me and he does care. So with that policy, it doesn't matter about gender. It matters that you actually care and you listen.
Yeah, I think, you know, if a legislator like TJ, and I know TJ does this because we've had this conversation personally in the halls walking around, if you start from a position where you want to treat somebody regardless of their gender or their race or their sexual orientation or any of that stuff, if you come at them like with a genuine sense of dignity and respect, you can start to come to understand at least a little bit where they're coming from. Now, I can't ever understand 100% what it's like to be a woman, obviously. But I can read about it. I can educate myself. I can listen to my constituents. I can think deeply about it and, you know, pray about it and think to myself, what is it that I think is best here, and then ask for input. You know, my party leadership is my floor leader, my assistant floor leader, are both women. They're both very, you know, accomplished women, intelligent women. Gina Mitten is a, you know, an attorney out of St. Louis. She's our assistant minority floor leader. She's great. And if I do something wrong, she'll tell me. Like, if I'm wrongheaded on something, she lets me know, and it causes me to reevaluate. I think it's the sort of humbleness to be able to admit that, man, I maybe hadn't really thought this through all the way, and, you know, just trying to be dignified and respectful of people.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much. Tell us your name.
Hi there. My name is Mandy. I'm a BSN who graduated from Jewel here in town a few years ago.
What's BSN stand for?
Bachelor of Science in Nursing.
Excellent.
It's a bachelor degree for nursing. So I've spent my career so far working in the public sector with a community behavioral health center, Safety Net Hospital. Worked at Truman for a while, another Safety Net Hospital. And I currently represent... I work for an organization that represents 24 different federally qualified health centers across the state, and one issue that is really hard for us to address is opioid abuse. And a great way that we can begin to solve that, it obviously isn't an end-all.
Mandy, can you step a little closer to the mic? Otherwise, there we go.
Is that better?
Yes.
Is to enact a prescription drug monitoring program. We're, I'm sure you know, actually the only state in the entire nation that doesn't have one, which is a bit of an embarrassment to say the least. Every year it comes up for vote, it seems like, and then they turn it into a Christmas tree bill, attaching a lot of other things to it, and it just never gets passed. So my question for you guys is, do you support a prescription drug monitoring program in the state of Missouri? And what can you do to help us get that passed?
Thank you for your question, Mandy.
Thanks for your question, Mandy.
So, Mandy, I want to just on a... So, notwithstanding the fact that I co-sponsored the PDMP bill and I was on the committee that it passed through and we voted unanimously for it, you're welcome. I support it very strongly, but like on a much more personal note, I'm a criminal defense lawyer by trade for the most part. I do some other types of law work as well, but about 2 years ago, I had a client who I was trying to help, and a lot of us were trying to help, and I had convinced the prosecutor that my client was worth helping, and we were trying to get her in line for the drug court program, and then the day before she was set to plead into drug court, which is a great program and helps a lot of people, she was going into drug court for prescription opioid abuse, and they found her dead the night before she was supposed to go into court. And if we had PDMP in place 2 years ago, if we had PDMP in place 5 years ago, she might still be alive today. That's how serious this is. And that's what, like, I encourage every single person in this room. We haven't done the actual third vote on it yet, so I encourage everyone in this room to call their representative, call your state senator. And I'm telling you, this is a life and death issue, people. Young kids are getting addicted to opioids every single day, and they're abusing our prescription drug system that we have now because there's no way to keep track of it. You can take a script and walk into a Walgreens, and a half an hour later, without any reason to stop you, they can refill that prescription and get those same pills and turn around and sell them on the street. And that's happening every single day, every day in Missouri, because we won't act as a legislative body to stop it.
Okay, so the bill has been successful in the House. Representative Holly Rader's bill, your co-sponsor.
I think we're doing the third read on it next week.
Before the break, it got an affirmative vote on the second reading. It still needs one more vote before it can go to the Senate.
It's not out of the House yet.
But the Senate has taken up their own version of the bill, and it has been held up. It has been held up over several terms by Senator Rob Schoff, who now has his own version that he's introducing in the Senate. T.J. Barry, where do you come down on this?
You know, I have dealt with this issue for 7 years, and I have voted for it for 7 years. And it does not come down to bills being Christmas treed. It comes down to one senator who happens to be a doctor who disagrees with the bill, how it's structured. And then it becomes politics. His bill that he is sponsored in the Senate this year, which has passed, but is still held up, I don't know that the House will support that version because it doesn't do much. And if you're going to go through the process and actually enact law and try to fix something, you better be doing it correctly rather than acting like you're doing something.
Good answers.
All right. So before we go, we were running short on time, but I want to ask one more question as you look to the rest of this session. We just passed the halfway point. A lot has to happen. The budget is one of the things that has to happen in the next few weeks, but there's a whole lot of bills out there. They've had one or two readings that may or may not come to be. What are you expecting for the rest of the session? Give us your top one or two highlights, things that you hope will happen or things that you expect will happen. Mark Ellenbracht.
What I hope will happen? Well, I hope that we pass a budget that's fair, that fully funds
What would be fair?
Well, a budget that's fair is a budget that recognizes that we got elected to represent the people of the state of Missouri, not the corporations of the state of Missouri, right? So we need to make sure that we protect the poorest and most in need before we start cutting taxes on corporations. So right now we have one of the lowest corporate tax bases in the United States, and we just gave a $500 to $750 a month tax hike to elderly people who rent and who are or are disabled because we took away the circuit breaker tax credit in the budget. And that's not public policy. That I think is a good idea. I think if you're a corporation, you're in business, you know, you should be able to have an environment where you can conduct your business fairly and, you know, pay your fair freight for, you know, the system, this government that we set up for you to operate your business in. If you're an elderly person or if you're on, you know, disability and you live in a rented apartment and you're not getting this tax credit, that is essentially a $500 a year increase in your tax bill every single year.
So the House Budget Committee came out with their 13 bills that make up the state budget last
something
night.
Like that.
That was like at 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. or something.
Yeah.
You probably haven't read them all, but
no,
I have not. Are you satisfied? Do you think you're going to be satisfied with what came out of the House Budget Committee?
Oh, I think that there's always ways to make something better. Like I said before, I haven't really gotten a chance to read any of those specific provisions in the budget bill. But, you know, one of the other things that I'm really optimistic about, it looks like, when you said what do we see happening or what do we hope to see happen, it looks like, cross your fingers, that the charter school bill might be dead in the Senate, which if that's the case, that's one more year where we don't have to worry about, yeah, that's seriously, clap
and,
for that.
And
they're
this
taking,
is,
they're
this
taking
is a bill
our
that would allow
to
public funds to be directed to charter schools anywhere in the state.
Yeah, well, I don't, they did a lot to
There's
it.
Different
there,
bills.
There
one of them would only allow it in certain urban areas.
That,
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right. There was a big grand compromise on the floor that the speaker tried to put on to make it more palatable for some of the rural Republicans to vote for it, and it tied enacting charter school funding to fully funding the foundation formula, which really put some of us in a tight spot because I've always been an advocate for fully funding foundation, and I've always been an opponent to charter school, and you know now they put me in this Hobbesian decision where I have to decide, well, do I vote not to fully fund public schools and therefore foreclose the possibility of charter school, or do I vote to fully fund it and know that I'm enacting charter school even though I voted against charter school when it came off the floor. But the good news in that is that it appears to be dead in the Senate because they're not able to get much done over there anymore. So
it's nice to have representatives on who can just badmouth the Senate freely. There's no one here to respond. TJ Barry, what do you hope happens or what do you expect to happen in the next few weeks?
I think that that's key to the question that was just said as far as the Senate's concerned. We can do lots and lots of work in the House. We'll continue to churn and work and try to produce good legislation. But our system is designed sometimes to go very, very slow. And right now, if the pro tem in the Senate that we've talked about that has all this power and he could push everything through, he's not pushing hardly anything through because they can't get it through, okay? Only a couple of bills, a very handful of bills, have gone through their system. So what do I see happening? I see us producing a budget, which is the only constitutionally mandated thing that representatives and senators have to do, and then a few more minor items, just block and tackling the problems that need to get done. But major issues, I really don't see more major issues getting done.
You know, this makes me want to ask you one more question, TJ Barry. You are termed out of the House after the next year and a half or so. A lot of representatives, after they serve four terms in the House, take a run for the Senate.
You know, I believe that our founding fathers wanted us to go and serve and then go home. And so I plan on going home. Could I fantasize about sometimes going back? Maybe, but I don't know that I will.
All right. He left himself a little bit of an open door there, didn't he? Okay, but that's all right. Just a little bit open. And Mark Ellenbrock, you tried two previous times to win this seat.
Three previous times.
You got elected. Do you plan to stay for a while?
I plan to stay for as long as the people in my district will have me. I think that I can do this job well, and I want to do this job well. You know, it's up to them. I'm going to keep putting my name on that ballot to try and do this job because I think I can do it well, and I want to, this is one of the ways that I feel like I can give back. You know, being from Liberty, the public school system here was great. Being an Eagle Scout here was fantastic. All the adults and you know that helped me to become the man that I am, and this is a way for me to kind of pay it forward. So.
Well, please join me in saying thank you to Representatives T.J. Barry and Mark Ellenbrock.
Don't forget to tip your waitress, people.
Yeah, tip your waitress. We're here all night. No, but do tip your servers. And I can't, you can't separate their applause because they, you got applause together. So that's great. Statehouse Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Special thanks tonight to Rock and Run Brewery. Just off the square here in Liberty. Also to KCUR, my colleagues, Mike Russo, our events producer, and all of my colleagues who are here. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And post a review there if you think good things about the show. If you don't, don't. You can also find us on the NPR One app. Just search for us and tap follow. We're on Twitter, too. I'm at PTS Brian, and they do have politics in Kansas, I've heard. You can follow my colleague from Statehouse Blend Kansas, at Sam Zeff. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR. If you have any other thoughts, write me an email, brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for coming, everyone.